Today on the Grave Talks, the May Stringer House, a conversation with Christian Paul. Started as a homestead in 1842, only to be added on several years later as it would come into the form it's seen as today. With life being shorter at that point in time, the house would see several of its inhabitants' lives come to an abrupt end, with their bodies being buried in unknown locations throughout the property. Today, the house is filled with local relics of the past. Who now haunts the May Stringer House? Is it former residents or souls attached to the antiques stored in its halls? We discuss all that today with Christian Paul on the Grave Talks.
Okay, the May Stringer property was originally homesteaded in 1842 by a man by the name of Richard Wiggins.
Okay.
Now, back then, there was some kind of thing with the government that if you took over X amount of acres of land and you built a house on it and you cultivated it, after 5 years, they would give you the land. Mm-hmm. So Richard Wiggins was there all the way up till John May bought the property in 1855. Now, this is where the first part of the May Stringer name gets his name. It's from John May. When he bought the property, he built a four-room house on this property for his family. Okay. Now, John lived there with his wife, Morena. He had two daughters at the time, Matilda and Annie. Now, I really don't know too much about Matilda or Annie other than what I've just read in historical record. And I did not find much about them anywhere. And from being there, I really didn't learn anything about them.
Okay. Yeah.
3 years after he builds the house, John dies of consumption. Now, consumption, for people that don't know, consumption is actually tuberculosis. So it was probably kind of an agonizing death, I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, at the time, there would have been, you know, TB hospitals and things of that nature as well. But he died. Did he die on the property?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. John May did die right on the property. And a few other people did too, although there's a lot of, how do I want to term this, resident spirits that did not.
Okay.
But we can get into that a little bit down the road here. His wife, Morena, keeps the house after John dies, and John is buried on the property. Mm-hmm. Although nobody can tell me where.
Okay.
At the time, the property was a few acres. Now it's roughly a city block.
Okay.
So, you know, pieces of land were sold off here and there, and now you have the city of Brooksville there. The house is also up on a hill. And I don't know if you know much about Florida landscape, but Florida is not long on things up on hills because there aren't many hills.
Sure. Yeah. Just the idea of hills in Florida is kind of, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not like a hill in Wisconsin.
No,
you know?
No, not at all. No.
So kind of keep that in mind.
Sure.
Okay, so Morena lives there through the Civil War. And what happens with Morena is over the course of time, she eventually marries a Civil War hero on the Confederate side by the name of Frank Saxon. I don't know if Frank, you know, was anybody of rank. Mm-hmm. You know, captain, major.
Sure.
I don't know anything about that, but yeah. it said he was a Civil War hero.
Okay.
Now, Marina's married to Frank for a little while. They have a son that they lose. And they also have a daughter by the name of Jessie May. Now, what happens in 1869, Marina is giving birth to Jessie May and dies.
Okay.
So you've got John May. He's already dead. Mm-hmm. Jessie May, now she's just died. She's also buried on the property somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know where. And I've asked. Nobody really seems to know when I talk to people when I've been down there.
Yeah.
Okay, so she's dead. 3 years later, Jessie May dies.
Okay.
Granted, back in those days, childhood fatalities were really, really common.
Yeah.
You know, but there is no record of what actually led to the demise of Jessie May. I don't know if she was sick. I don't know if it was one of those freak horse and buggy accidents or who knows.
Any number of things could have happened. Yeah.
Any number of things could have happened. But she is also buried on that property. So you've got John May. You've got Jessie May, the daughter. And you've got Marina buried there. Mm-hmm. All this transpires down the road a little bit. Frank Saxon sells the home. And he's off the radar at that point. The house changed hands a few times. Now, remember, this is just a simple two-story, four-room house that looks nothing like the Mae Stringer house looks today.
Okay.
But we'll get into that a little later as we get into the story here.
Sure.
Okay. Frank sells the home. The property eventually makes its way to Dr. Sheldon Stringer. Hence the name, the Mae Stringer House.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what Dr. Stringer did when he bought the property, he added 10 rooms to this house. And that kind of gives it the Victorian look and feel that it has today.
So quite an extensive add-on that he does to this thing. Is there, does he build it essentially around the core of the existing house? Is there any signs of the original house that are still visible to the outside?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge. The house was built up, not only with other rooms, but porches were added. And now the house has got a total of 7 gables.
Wow.
So you take this little nondescript 4-family house. Well, now you've got a 14-room house that Dr. Stringer has built up. And it's given it this, Victorian appearance now.
Yeah.
7 gables, gingerbread trim. Sits up on the hill. And like I said before, there's not a whole lot of hills out there in Florida. So
it stands out.
It stands out. And basically the way it sits right now, it's like it's got its own little block, I guess, for lack of a better term. So it sits there. Now, the Mae Stringer House is also known as the Hernando Heritage Museum.
Okay.
Okay. The house was an integral part of Dr. Stringer's medical practice for many years. I do not know if anybody died in the house. But I know, back then, a lot of doctors did operate out of big homes.
Sure.
as kind of like a, you know, a miniaturized hospital, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, definitely a possibility. After the Stringers had died, the house changed hands many, many times. And in 1980, that's when the Hernando Historical Museum Association bought the property.
So was it lived in up until about 1980 as a residential home until it became a museum?
It was lived in, and according to Ms. Bonnie, Bonnie is the docent that I always end up talking to when I go there. Mm-hmm. She said there was also a motorcycle club in there for a while, too.
Okay.
What that all involved, who knows, what Sons of Anarchy and...
Yes. You look at the house and it doesn't look like, yeah, motorcycle club.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Not the first thing that comes to mind, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, you kind of go, huh?
Yeah.
But that's what I was told. And we're going to get into a few more things that I've been told over the course of time of going down there. Now, I've been down there a total of 3 times. Mm-hmm. Once with a group that I'm no longer associated with, and we did not investigate that night. We were supposed to, and due to some scheduling snafu, as we got there, another group showed up, and well, our investigation for the night went south real quick.
Okay.
We did have the option to stay, but there was already... Oh, let me think. I think there was at least 7 people in the other group. My experience tells me smaller is better.
Sure.
And that would have put us up to like 10 people. And I just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah. It doesn't become an investigation at that point. It's more of a attraction.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 Now, most of what I've been told going there is from Bonnie. She is the, I don't know what title I can give her. She is the head ghost docent.
Okay.
Is there such a title? I don't know.
I think there is now.
That title. So she is the docent volunteer that handles the investigations that are there. I guess there is an issue there with other docents. They'll do the daytime tours and the events and all that, but they will not be there for nighttime ghost tours and or investigations.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about some basic things around the property here. On one end of the property, there's a whole bunch of tombstones laid out. Mm-hmm. And I had inquired about the tombstones. Was that anybody's tombstone that died on the property? And I was told no. Those were tombstones that people in the area had found and brought to the museum. And there's got to be at least a dozen of them there.
I'm looking at the pictures of them, and it almost looks like a Halloween display setup, the way that they're kind of placed, because they don't appear to be naturally placed as to where bodies would be.
Yeah, so, they're definitely too close for that.
So yeah, yeah.
Definitely too close for that. But, you know, I did inquire, you know, and so now did a spirit follow their tombstone over there?
Hmm.
Yeah. That I don't know, but it could be a possibility, I suppose.
Sure.
Everything on the inside of the house has all been donated by local contributors. And there is a lot inside this house. If you're looking on the website, I know there's a few pictures in there. Bonnie told me everything in there was donated.
Okay.
Okay. So what spirit came with what donation? Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to delve into that in just a little bit here, because there is one thing that I'm pretty sure is an attachment situation.
Okay.
Some other things on Ms. Bonnie. I've already stated that she's the only docent that's consistently on the presence on the premises during investigations and ghost tours. Bonnie's daughter will not come into the house. Bonnie will not go up into the third floor by Gary. And you'll hear more about Gary in a little bit.
Okay.
Rumor has it Gary does not like women, and I've heard stories of women not having such a pleasant time up on the third floor.
Okay.
Another thing I learned that they do put on an annual Halloween event there every year, and the house does not like Halloween.
Interesting.
That's what I was told. They do not like Halloween.
How is it that the house does not like Halloween? What goes on that gives them that perspective on it?
The way I understood it, there are just certain things that happen activity-wise. And then once Halloween, all the stuff is all put away and back to where it belongs, certain activities recede.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't remember certain particular instances that Bonnie has told me about.
Okay.
It is a moneymaker for them when they do that, because, you know, it's an independent museum. So, you know, independent places are always looking for funding. So they do, well, they do the ghost hunts. They do ghost tours.
Sure.
And then they get people mad. I've heard a few stories about people mad that went on the ghost tour and were mad because when are we going to see the ghost?
I think any ghost tour has that problem because,
you know,
it's not exactly an on-demand option.
Yeah. You know, I don't know where the button is to push for that to make that happen.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But it is a yearly event.
Okay.
I have also seen they've got a guest book, per se, that other teams have been, you know, a lot of other teams have been in there. In fact, the team that I was down there with the first time had been in there several times. And that's why they recommended going there, which great. I was all for it. I have seen many pictures in the book of apparitions out on the porch. Now, the porch is a two-story wraparound porch. Goes from the front door down one side of the building, around the corner, and down the next side of the building. So there's all kind of room for walking and swinging in a rocking chair, mm-hmm. type of thing. I've seen apparition pictures on the first story of the porch and on a second story of the porch that different people have set in. I don't know the people that took the pictures, but they don't look obviously photoshopped.
Okay.
So I will take them with a grain of salt as being genuine.
Sure.
Okay. So you're going down there and you just want to tour the museum, although it's closed now because of all the COVID. Mm-hmm. Ask to see the book. They can show you the book, and you can see what's to be seen. Now, seeing that we were talking about the porch a little bit, I want to go and talk about Rick.
Okay.
Who's Rick? Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I did not find anything on any of the tombstones out there with the name Rick or Richard on them. But I have done three sessions out on this porch. And I'm always asking who's out here with me. And it's always the same answer.
Rick. Okay.
Now, this is on one of our videos on our YouTube channel, Crossing Guard Paranormal on YouTube. So you can see some of these answers.
Okay.
I've had session out there on a very stormy, rainy night where there's three rockers out there, and I'm sitting out there with equipment, and I'm asking, you know, Rick, will you come and rock with me for a little while? Mm-hmm. And on the recorder, I got yes.
So you got to be sitting there thinking, well, at any moment, I wonder if this other chair is going to start rocking.
Believe me, Tony, I'm looking and I didn't see anything happen. And I had a camera in my hand ready to catch it if it would have happened. And it didn't happen.
Okay. Probably a little bit of a disappointment, but you still got a response or something.
I still got a response, yeah. Although watching that chair move, that would have been fantastic.
Sure.
You know, that would have been icing on the cake for sure. For sure. The only other thing I've had out on the porch of any consequence, there's always, you know, EVPs, not always Class A, was that coming out the front door and just taking a shot down the porch one time, I did get a big black mist forming in the lower right side of the picture. Didn't see it with my naked eye, but it was definitely on camera.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go upstairs now, if that's okay.
Sure.
And as we go upstairs, I'm a little hesitant to say free advertising for somebody, mm-hmm. but there is a method to my madness here, so bear with me. We're going to talk about a certain paranormal team that was just there the week before I was there.
Okay.
And I was sworn to secrecy not to tell anybody who was in there, why they were there, how long they were there. Well, now the show's already been out on TV and it's been in reruns already, so I think I'm safe that I can divulge this secret. And that was that the Kindred Spirits team was okay. there.
Sure.
Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, Chip Coffey. Mm-hmm. They were there for 4 days. I don't know any of them personally. I've never met them. I don't know the production crew. So I don't know what they were looking for when they were there, but they were there for 4 days. And the show was basically based on a spirit they call Gary. Now, Gary resides up on the third floor. Gary supposedly does not like women. Gary was not mentioned by name once that I saw watching their episode.
Okay.
For whatever reason, but you talk to any of the docents there and they're going to mention Gary. So why Kindred Spirits didn't mention him? No clue.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know if it was a production thing or.
But they hint at him existing, and that's kind of what the focus is without calling him by name.
Well, they were definitely involved in the thing that he was attached to. Up in the attic, when you first walk into the attic, there's like a little what I would call Gary's area. There's a bed, a chair, and there is a chest-style trunk, you know, that people would have traveled in with 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got multiple drawers in it, and this opens this way, and this opens that way. And what the Kindred Spirits did was move the chest down to the second floor to see if they could get Gary to come down to the second floor. And they got activity down there. So I guess their whole point was to see if he was really attached to that chest if he was going to follow the chest, which I guess he did do.
Okay.
Without ever mentioning his name now, Tony.
Okay.
Okay. And there was no mention. Here's the thing that kind of struck me odd. There was no mention of anything else on the property during that show. And it was such a injustice to the house, because this house is loaded.
And that's understandable. I would be disappointed as well. I understand the logistics of production as well. And I mean, it is tough to try and put too much into one, you know, block of essentially 30 some minutes of time. But at the same point, trying to do justice to something like that, you almost need multiple episodes.
You would think so, for all the activity that's in this sure. place. You know, this is one of those few places that I've been to where there's basically activity wherever I go in the house. Mm-hmm. Very similar to what's a good example? Goldfield High School is like that. Stimson Hospital in Eaton Rapids, Michigan is like that. Where there's just, no matter where you go, if you're paying attention and you've got the right equipment, you're going to get all kind of stuff.
What was it like for you the first time you set foot in this house?
The first time, you know, I walked in the first time and I'm looking around and I'm like, wow, this really is a museum. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I'm looking around, there's enough in there to occupy your attention for quite a while. So you have to kind of start narrowing things down. Are we going to go this way? Am I going to go this way? Am I going to start upstairs? So by the time I got back to my second visit, which was my first investigation visit, mm-hmm. my second visit to the property, well, we started upstairs by Gary. I mean, that's what we did, you know, and there was other things that I think Kindred Spirits could have touched on that would have made, you know, for an interesting episode. But like I said, I don't know the producers. I don't know what the goal was. So
what was it like for you on the third floor? I'm assuming you knew a little bit about Gary at that point. Did you initially, or did anybody on your team start to feel anything? Was there any sensing of his animosity towards women within the group that you were working with?
I didn't get that at all, but that's just me.
Sure.
Okay. Like I said, the attic is set up. There's kind of like a Gary area for the front, right where you walk in. That's where the chest is, the bed is. And then a little ways off to the side, there's a couch, there's a chair, and the rest of it is attic stuff. A lot of it is the props that they use for the Halloween fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And other things that they do. The second time I was there, and what I mean second time is my second investigation there, was on a dark and stormy night with thunder and lightning, and we had light enough lightning you could actually read a script sitting up in the third floor.
Wow.
That's how much lightning we had. And, you know, getting back to with Gary. Gary is connected to that trunk. And I've had EVP sessions that I've done. And I asked Gary, I said, you know, what is keeping you here? And the answer is the chest.
I guess the question is why. I'm always curious about that when you have an entity that's attached to an object. Is it like a leash? Is it like a chain where they cannot get away from it? Or are they choosing to actively protect that item? Just as one would have, you know, your item, if you will, if you're running out of your house and it's on fire, what do you grab? Is it that sort of a scenario? It's just an opinion-based question, but what's your opinion?
Well, that's a very good question, Tony. You know, I tried thinking to myself, did Gary travel with this trunk? Was he a traveler? Was he, you know, a medicine salesman? Mm-hmm. Was he an actor? Was he, who knows? And looking at the trunk, that really doesn't give you any indication of really what he was doing, what he wanted to do. I did ask one question in one session at a point. I said, did you work the plantation here? Now, I can't say Mae Stringer was actually ever a plantation in the formal sense that people think of plantations, but I knew using the word farm would not have been the right question.
Sure.
And the EVP answer was, I haven't. So that led me back to, he's attached to that chest. He's attached to that cabinet for whatever the reason.
Is this a chest, a cabinet that's built into the house, or is this like an object that's been brought in for the museum?
This is an object that was brought in. This was the kind of cabinet, if you've ever seen traveling chests from the late 1800s.
Sure.
They open up and it'll be like a spot to hang, let's say your shirts on one side, and then there'll be these little drawers and cubby holes on the other side for putting in personal items and I don't know, your socks and underwear, so to speak.
It could very well be, you know, that's someone's life in that chest. If you're traveling with it, I mean, that could be a majority of your possessions. It could also explain why one on the other side, if they're confused and not knowing what's going on, thinking, I'm not going to leave my chest. I mean, this is my stuff. And if you're in that confused state, that could explain why there's that attachment or feeling towards that object.
Very definitely. It could be. Although, unfortunately, to my knowledge, there are no objects still in the chest.
Sure. At least
not in our plane of existence.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. At least not that we're seeing. That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Christian. In part two, who is Gary, the spirit that seems to haunt the Mae Stringer House's third floor? Do weather patterns or thunderstorms positively or negatively affect an investigation? How many entities does Christian believe haunts the house? Where do they come from? Who's Jessie Mae? And why does she still roam the halls of the house? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.